she can do before she dies. So entanglement, teleportation, and other stuff in the non-inertial recurrence frames.
Thank you. So today I'm going to talk about work done in collaboration with Rob Mann. Most of the results that I'm going to show from today's talk are results in this paper, Alice Falls into a Black Hole, which we posted on the web recently. But I'm also going to talk about some ideas and some results and some work in preparation that I'm doing in collaboration, again, with Rob and with Frederick Schuller. So this is a new topic for me. So during my PhD, I did some work studying entanglement in quantum optics, looking at things that, like the entanglement between two atoms and one mode of the electromagnetic field in a cavity and things like that. So basically, what I've tried to do here is apply some of the insights that I got from studying these sorts of systems now into the topic of entanglement and relativity. So, well, this is the story of Alice when she falls into a black hole. So in Alice in Wonderland, Alice tries to follow the rabbits into the black hole. And I'm curious about this moment in which she falls into a black hole and sees if she's still entangled with the rabbit that it's called Rob here. This always happens to me, always. Last time the same thing, I think. Oopsala. Okay. When it's really slow, something is coming. Yeah. Okay. I think it's working now. So I'm going to start giving an overview on entanglement. And I'm going to present the measures and the concepts from entanglement that I'm going to be using in this talk. And then I'm going to motivate the topic of relativity and entanglement, basically just saying why I'm interested in this topic. I'm going to present my results on entanglement and non-inertial frames. And basically, the main idea is I'll consider that Alice and Rob have Rob is the accelerated bomb, so they share a maximal entangled state. And what happens if Rob is accelerated? So I'm going to show that the entanglement is degraded by the acceleration. And then I'm going to show that entanglement is observer dependent. So it really depends on from the point of view of who you're describing the density matrix. So we find this as problematic, especially when one wants to generalize these concepts to many particles. So well, I'm going to motivate this idea of coming with a concept of proper entanglement, equivalent to what would be like the proper time in relativity. And then I'm going to show why my results apply to the situation in which Alice falls into a black hole, and talk about some ideas that we're investigating with Frederick and with Rob, like if one can prepare a state which doesn't feel the acceleration. And this would be nice because then we could use it for quantum information theory without having quantum information task without having any degradation of entanglement because of acceleration. And some really crazy ideas, trying to see if we can think of some protocols in which Alice could send, I would be happy at least signaling from the black hole and saying I'm alive. So this is work in progress. And the reason is like, okay, if you can't, find the reason why in terms of my setting. So even if it's not possible, I think it's very interesting to find out why it wouldn't be possible from this point of view. So let me start giving you the setting that I'm thinking about. So Alice is in an inertial frame, and she has a cavity. And this cavity supports a single mode of a scalar field, for example. And she's interested in single photon excitations. I mean, she wants to prepare a state that's a superposition between the ground state and the first excited state. So for example, she can have an atom pass through the cavity, and when it interacts with the field inside the cavity, if the cavity is prepared in the ground state, but, for example, the atom emits a photon, and then she can prepare some state, which is superposition of ground and excited state. And then Rob it's somewhere else. Also, here it's Bob. Sorry, it's somewhere else. Also in an inertial frame, and he can do the same thing with his cavity. And we're interested in what's the state of this joint system of cavity one and cavity two. So what sort of states they can prepare? Well, one of them are called separable states. So separable states are defined in this way. If you can read, if you can write the joint state as the state of Alice, tensor product, the state of Rob, the state is separable. And what this means physically is that it's the most general state that can be prepared by local operations in classical communication. So Alice can put her cavity in the ground state, have an atom pass through it, give an excitation to the cavity, and she can make measurements, she can make rotations, she can send classical information to Bob, and Bob does the same thing, and the most general state they can prepare looks like that. But they could do more interesting things by having interaction. So let's say that they make their cavities overlap, and they have, again, an inertial atom go through the cavity, and then the atom has a two-photon excitation, and they could produce an entangled state. So the definition of entangled state is that you cannot write as a tensor product of these Alice states and Rob states in this way. And well, physically, one can see that this cannot be prepared by local operations in classical communications. They have to have some sort of interaction. And another way of preparing the state could be, for example, having the same atom going through first one of the cavities and then the other one. But some interaction is necessary. And well, this state, if Alice and Rob have many copies of this state and they want to make some statistics, they see that they find maximal correlations with Alice, measure zero, Bob will also measure zero. When Alice measures one, Rob, she collapses the wave function, and Rob measures one, so they have maximal correlations. And well, this maximal entangled state is usually seen, well, any entangled state, as a resource for quantum information tasks, such as quantum teleportation. So how do we quantify entanglement? How do we know how entangled the state between Alice and Bob is? So basically, for pure states, for a bipartite system, it's well understood. We have that the state of a bipartite system can be written in a special basis called the Schmidt basis, in which the correlations between the two systems are explicit. Here we can see that if Alice finds her system in the ground state, for example, Bob's would be the same, and if Alice finds her, makes a measurement and finds her system with n photons, Bob would find the same state. So to see how entangled the state is, you could look at this omega n coefficient. And if you think of a state in which only one of these omega n's is 1 and all the rest are 0, then the state is separable. And if you think on the opposite, that these omega n's are all the same, equal to 1 over square root of n, you would have a maximally entangled state. So how these omegas are distributed is an indication of how entangled the state is. And based on this, so you need to quantify entanglement here, you would need some function of these coefficients, which is continuous, monotonous, concave, and the von Neumann entropy satisfies these conditions. And well, there's other physical reasons why we quantify entanglement in this way, but I don't want to go into details right now. So the entropy of a density matrix rho is defined by the trace of rho log in base 2 rho. And if we take the state of Alice and Bob and write it in the density matrix with the density matrix operator, and we calculate the entropy of that state, we find that it's equal to 0. And therefore, if we take the reduced density matrix of any of the subsystems, defined as a trace over the degrees of freedom of the other system, of the whole density matrix, and we calculate the entropy, we find that they're equal, and they quantify entanglement between A and B. If you have a system which has more particles, for example, you could also look at the bipartite entanglement, if the state is pure, of subsystems bipartite divisions of your system. So if you had, for example, some of the problems I studied before, two atoms in a field, you could look at one atom in the field as one system and see how entangled that as a system is to the other atom, and you could play with this sort of things. Now, for mixed states, quantifying entanglement is very complicated, and one of the reasons why is because there's no analogous to the Schmidt decomposition. A mixed state can be expressed in infinite many different ways in terms of pure states, so this really complicates the idea of quantifying entanglement there, and well, indeed, entropy no longer quantifies entanglement properly. But there's something that we can do with entanglement for mixed states. First of all, we can define what entanglement means. I mean, this sounds a bit silly, but for example, with multipartite systems, entanglement, defining entanglement is not trivial. So for mixed states, we can. We say that a state is separable if we can write it as a convex sum of the density matrix of one of the system tensor product, the density matrix of the other one. And we can relatively easily say if this state is separable or not. There is this necessary separability condition that tells us that if we take the density matrix of a separable state and we look at the partial transpose, this partial transpose will have positive eigenvalues. So the partial transpose of a density matrix, when the eigenvalues are negative, are an indication of entanglement. Now, this is a necessary condition, which means that if we calculate the partial transpose, we look at the eigenvalues, and we don't find a negative eigenvalue, the state would still be entangled, and this is called bound entanglement. So quantifying entanglement, again, in this case, is hard. And there's no unique measure, there are several, and many of them are motivated by physics. And for example, entanglement cost is related to the amount of resources that we need to construct a given state. So let's say that Alice and Bob want to investigate the entanglement of a given state, and they have n qubits maximally entangled. And they want to see by doing local operations and classical communications, how many states can they construct with the degree of entanglement of the state they want to investigate. So it's a state with less entanglement, obviously, and they can have more states with this entanglement by doing local operations and classical communications. So if one takes the ratio of the number of entangled states divided by the number of states that they can create by this procedure in the limit of infinite number of copies, then they have an estimate of the resources needed for this construction of the state, and this is the measure called entanglement cost. Then there's the relative entropy of entanglement, which tells you what's the distance between your entangled from your entangled state to the set of separable states. And entanglement of distillation is very similar to entanglement cost, but the other way around. Alice and Bob start with a given number of states with the entanglement they want to quantify, and they see how many maximal entangled states can they construct with this state doing local operations and classical communications. And again, in the asymptotic limit, they find a measure. Now, the problem here is that these measures of entanglement are well physically motivated, but we can't calculate almost anything. For example, the concurrence, which is related to the entanglement cost, and these things can only be calculated for two qubits. And for entanglement of distillation, we don't have a way of doing it because these measures involve minimizations over all possible decompositions and pure states and things like that. And these are very, very difficult things to find. So they're physically motivated, but they're not very useful. But Vidal and Werner came up with another proposal for a measure called the logarithmic negativity, which is based on this criteria for separable states. So basically the idea is, okay, the presence of negative eigenvalues are a sign of entanglement in the system. So what happens if we sum over all these negative eigenvalues? Maybe this gives us an estimate of how entangled the state is. So they found that this measure satisfies some of the criteria for good entanglement measures. And well, the definition of the negativity is the log base 2 of the trace norm of the partial transpose, but it's really taking the log base 2 of all the sum over all the negative eigenvalues. And this is a measure that we can calculate, although we don't know exactly what it means physically. But there's been some work, for example, recently Plenio proved that it's an upper bound to all the other measures I took before. So we thought that by applying this measure, there was something to be learned in the problem that we're going to address. So another measure that we're going to use is the mutual information, which is defined as the sum of the entropy from the reduced density matrix of one system plus the other minus the entropy of the joint density matrix. And this measure tells us, gives us an estimate of the total correlations, classical plus quantum. So the question that we're interested in is, what happens if Bob moves with respect to Alice? So what happens with entanglement? So there has been some work on inertial frames considering that Rob moves to respect to Alice, but still in an inertial frame. And well, some nice results were found. Danny did some work on this. Yanis Pachos, Paul Alsing, and Milburn. Well, here are some of the people that have contributed to this topic. And basically, they found that entanglement overall doesn't change, but entanglement can be transferred from some degrees of freedom into others. For example, if one thinks of a spin half particles entangled and considers their position, after some Lorentz transformation, the degrees of freedom of the spin particles can look small, I mean, be degraded, but then the entanglement in position will grow. So if one measures only the spin degrees of freedom, one will see entanglement degradation. But if one takes into account all the degrees of freedom, then you find that entanglement is conserved. So Paul Alsing and Milburn wanted to study the same sort of ideas, but now considering that Rob moves in an accelerated frame. So what happens there? So to study entanglement in this setting, they thought about looking at the teleportation protocol between Alice and they introduced Rob, the accelerated Bob. And why they do that is because teleportation works on entanglement. So if Alice wants to teleport a state to Rob, they have as a resource a maximum entangled state, and they perform this protocol in which Alice needs to send some classical information to Rob, and Rob gets the state that Alice wants to send. And how well this protocol works is estimated by the fidelity. So it's simply the overlap of the state that Alice wants to send with the one that Rob received. And if we start with a maximal entangled state, and there's no noise and everything is kind of nice and perfect, the fidelity is 1. So they were asking, what if in this protocol we have the accelerated Rob? And they found that the teleportation fidelity goes to 0. Well, as the acceleration grows, the fidelity decreases, and they saw this as an indication of entanglement degradation. So I found this very interesting, but one of the reasons why I don't like too much this approach is because it depends on this protocol. And for example, if one wants to study what happens with a case where Alice falls into a black hole, there cannot be any classical communication between Alice and Bob. So we can't really study this thing based on the protocol. When you have an accelerated party, there is a time up to when Alice can send classical information to Rob. After some time, she loses him. Yeah?
Yeah, so in protocol, they all assume that quantum information is stored in the spin protocol.
I'm going to give the details of what's the thing. It's scalar fields in cavities. So they're like a harmonic oscillator. But I will explain them in detail because I simply took their thing, but I studied entanglement directly. So that's basically the main idea. I said, well, if one then wants to push this further to understand some things about black hole entropy or the loss of information stuff, it's not useful anymore because the protocol doesn't work, so you can't say anything. So that was our initial motivation to study entanglement here. So I found a lot of similarities of the density matrix to the ones that I studied before in quantum optics. So the idea was to apply the techniques that I learned there to this situation. So the main idea in this project was to study entanglement directly in this setting and see what we could say from that. And well, we consider important the question of studying entanglement between moving observers. One, from a practical point of view, and well, you would say, well, yeah, we don't detect that on Earth, but I mean, come on, we're theoretical physicists, so we have to think about what's going to happen when we can build an enterprise and have entanglement there. So I think that's from a practical point of view, it's also interesting. But I'm just kidding. I mean, I'm interested from the just understanding the fundamental point of view. But I want to see space-time in like quantum mechanics and quantum information. When I was in learning physics at university, and my teacher said, like, oh, okay, so this is an entangled state, so they prepare it in this point, and then they take it away, and I kind of said, when did you take it away? So that's not in the formalism, and we use it all the time. We always say they prepare the state here, and they take it away, and then they make measurements, but you never see space-time there. And I found that very frustrating, and this is a little step to start understanding what's the role of space-time in entanglement, for example, and then I want to understand more quantum information using these sorts of entangled states. So let me give you now the details of the framework proposed in, by Alsing and Milburn. So we have Alice, which is an inertial observer, with her cavity, which again supports a single mode of the scalar field. And she's interested in preparing, with an atom going through her cavity, one single excitation state. So I mean superpositions of the ground state and the first excited state. And well, it's she has another partner, Bob. The same in the inertial frame. They get together. They have this atom now putting into the field two photons, and they entangle their state in this way. And now the question is, what happens if the cavity is accelerated along with the observer? So Bob becomes Rob. Okay, so we consider flat space-time. So in the space-time diagram, Alice follows this red line. I lost my concentration. Her world line is this red line. And if you think of this point P where they intersect, the cavities come together, and then from the point of view of Alice, she prepares her state in the ground state, and Rob prepared his initially in this way, and she lets an atom in her frame emit two photons. So from her point of view, she entangled these cavities maximally. But we will see that Rob sees a very different situation. So if one thinks about what happens a bit after this point, Alice will want to make measurements and investigate what happened with her state. And she's in an inertial frame, so the best coordinate system for Alice is just the Minkowski coordinates, where the line element is dt squared minus dx squared. But the world line of Rob is this parabola. This is the world line for a constant accelerated, a uniform accelerated observer. And he as well later will make some measurements, but his measurements will be done in a different reference frame. So we need different coordinates. And these are the Ringler coordinates. So basically, the temporal coordinates are these blue lines. It's the eta. And the spatial coordinates are hyperbolas that go, I couldn't draw them. I really tried and I spent a lot of time and then I gave up. But you can imagine all the hyperbolas filling the grid, being asymptotic to the 45 degree lines. And we can express half of the Minkowski space by this coordinates, and the other half have a different transformation. Basically, it's the same one, but with this minus sign. So basically, if we want to express the whole Minkowski, we want to write the whole Minkowski space in terms of Ringler coordinates, we need these two branches, which are totally disconnected. So these are called the Ringler coordinates, and here you can see that the line element is very similar to the Minkowski one, but we have this factor which basically kind of blows up at midpoint or makes smaller the space. Now, Alice has her cavity and Rob has his cavity and they have a quantum field inside, right? But the main point here is that the quantization of fields in different coordinates is different, so we have to take this into consideration. So what does a Ringler observer sees in the Minkowski vacuum? I want to see what's the, if Alice sees a vacuum in her state, what does Rob see? So here I have the Minkowski coordinates, the Ringler ones. And then we look at the Klein-Gordon equation for a free field. And you see that they're very similar. There's just this factor here, which really doesn't count because we have this equal to zero. If there was some mass or something like that, it wouldn't be the case, but here it is. So the solution, a mode solution for this equation has this form where K satisfies the condition stated here. And the point is that it's exactly the same for the Ringler coordinates, but we have to take into account these two wedges. So there will be a different mode solution for the wedge one and the wedge two, which is stated in this equations here. So basically, you see like the temporal coordinate has a different sign, and this is because on the second wedge, time runs in the opposite direction, so we have to consider the other sign. And well, so this is solution of this equation, and then if you take a superposition with a certain amplitude of these modes, and then you quantize, you end up with this solution here, where AK is the annihilation and AK dagger creation operators for the UK mode. So what happens with the Ringler coordinates is that you have exactly the same, but you have now this other creation and annihilation operators for the region one and region two. So the ground state is defined as a state of no particles. So here we have it defined for Minkowski space, and from Ringler space, where we have the vacuum in region one and the vacuum in region two, defined in this way, and the vacuum would be a tensor product of these two. And the question is, are these two vacuums the same? And the answer is no. There is a transformation that relates these AK modes to the B1 and B2 K modes, which is called the Bogoliubov transformation. So basically, when one observer sees, let's say that this cavity is in an inertial frame, and this observer as well, so the observer, and it's prepared in the ground state, so this observer sees this ground state, a observer accelerated respect to this cavity will see a mixed state. And this is because the Minkowski vacuum is expressed in terms of Ringler modes as this two-mode squeeze state of the Ringler modes, of the Ringler states, where this R is related to the acceleration of the observer by this equation. But I'm just going to pay attention to the fact that when R grows, it means that the acceleration grows. And the thing is, because Rob lives in the wedge one, he's casually disconnected to all the modes in the region two, so one has to trace over these modes, and he's left with a thermal state. And this is basically the Unruh effect. So the question that we're asking is how entanglement is degraded or not by the Unruh effect. So let's go back to our setting. In the moment where they intersect, the cavities intersect, Alice, according to what she sees, prepares this maximal entangled state by letting this atom go through in the inertial frame and having a two-atom excitation. But Rob doesn't see that. Rob sees that this atom is emitting a whole bunch of particles in a thermal state. So the right description for him is in terms of Ringler modes. So he has to use this expression for the ground state and for the first excited state. This first excited state is simply found by taking the B dagger operator over the B in the region one, of course, for this state. And then he has to trace over the region that he doesn't see. So we end up with a density matrix which is mixed. And now we want to calculate the entanglement. So in the moment that they met, Alice swears that she prepared the maximal entangled state, but Rob does not agree. And now we have to use techniques of mixed state entanglement to say how entangled the state is. So the first thing that we did is we looked at the superability condition. So we took the density matrix, we calculated the partial transpose, and we looked at the eigenvalues of that. So here are the eigenvalues. And one can very easily see that for any finite r, there's always a negative eigenvalue. So that for finite acceleration, the state is always entangled. And only in the limit, where the acceleration goes to infinity, one could maybe find an eigenvalue equal to zero. But this we can't investigate here because n grows to infinity as well in the sum. So one can't address the limit there. But we can address the limit of infinite acceleration by calculating the negativity. So basically, we sum over all these negative eigenvalues. And we find this equation. Now, this sum we couldn't do directly, but what we could do was bound the sum and calculate those by two other sums that we could calculate directly. And then we can calculate the limit of infinite acceleration. And here we have a graph of these two bounds. And you see that as acceleration grows, the entanglement goes to zero. And in the limit of infinite acceleration, it's exactly zero. So this is what we're able to prove. And well, it's very interesting because here I said the negativity is an upper bound to the entanglement cost and the entanglement of distillation. So we have a good physical picture of what happens in the limit in terms of the entanglement. You know? Both of these measures are zero. So, yes? So we just plotted in terms of like r, which is related to the acceleration by some, I showed it before, some more complicated thing, but we really didn't pay much attention to that part.
I mean, I just wonder, because there's, you know, clearly some, looking at that picture, there's some sort of transition around two. I'm wondering,
you know,
what is two?
Yeah, I think it's, maybe it seems like a transition because I think of the graph, but I think it just goes sort of, yeah, I'm not sure. We haven't analyzed these sorts of details. It could be interesting.
Okay.
Sorry, Daniel, I didn't hear. What did you say? Yeah, so we didn't do any.
Probably has more meaning later on when it has to do with the behavior here, like all event horizons, but that the past, like all good scale in this text.
Ah, yeah. But I'm not going to discuss that.
So at r equals 0, what is the number, let's say, for the red line at the origin? Is it between 1.2 and 1.4?
So the negativity, the entanglement, you can calculate exactly at r equals 0, and it's 1. So because these are the upper bound and the lower bound. So the real measure, the entanglement, is 1. when r is equal to 0. This green line? Well, it's what well, not really, because what we did is that you see this sum, we couldn't sum it, so we just bounded by other sums. So there's no physical. Okay, so where did the entanglement go? So okay, so if you look at the state before we trace over the modes in region 2, this is a pure state. So if we calculate the entropy there, it's equal to 0. And if I choose to make a bipartite division by taking the state of Alice, Alice cavity, and then Rob state in region 1, and see how that is entangled to the modes in region 2, I know that the entropy of this reduced density matrix is equal to the entropy of the reduced density matrix in the region, which is causally disconnected from both of them. So basically, what one can see is that when there is no acceleration, Alice and Rob have a state which is maximally entangled. And because this entropy here is 0, it means that there's no entanglement with the region 2. And now, as the acceleration grows, the entanglement between Alice and Rob is degraded, and the entanglement to region 2 is bigger. Maybe I should have put here an extra equation. If you see, when I express the vacuum as a two-mode squeeze state of the Ringler modes, you can see that this state becomes maximally entangled. So the modes of region 1 and region 2 become maximally entangled when r goes to infinity, and they're a separable state. They're disentangled when r is equal to 0. And, well, in the limit of infinite acceleration, that's exactly what I already said. You have maximal entanglement with the disconnected region and zero entanglement between the particles. So when I found this kind of nice, because the work that I did in quantum optics was I was studying two atoms in one mode of the electromagnetic field. And this was some work following an idea by Wouters, and he saw that the state, he looked at the state of three qubits. And some states have this property called entanglement sharing, that if two of the qubits are maximally entangled, then they're disentangled through the third one. And this sort of trade-off between the different bipartite entanglements that one can look at this system, this tripartite system. And then what we did is that we considered one harmonic oscillator there, and we saw that a similar thing happened. And this is really exactly the same. Just I have one two-level system and two infinite-dimensional systems, and it's a state that has a similar property. So, well, we just thought that it was interesting to look at it. So here I just want to again state what are the results in the infinite acceleration limit. Entanglement goes to 0. Then the mutual information, I didn't talk too much about, I just showed the graph. You see that starts from 2, which is the mutual information of the pure state, and goes to 1. So this means that in the limit of infinite acceleration, our state is only classically correlated. And the state is maximally entangled to region 2. So now let me point out something that we found very interesting. So let's think of two cavities which are in an inertial frame, two inertial observers with their detectors all inertial making measurements, and they prepare an entangled state by an inertial atom. But what happens now if one of the observers, so the cavities don't move, one of the observers is accelerated. So this could be done like instead of making your measurement, so to measure the state you could pass a detector which could be another atom in an inertial frame, or you could pass an atom accelerated with respect to the cavity.
Do you know what the state looks like if it's
accelerated? You mean this state here?
Yeah, would it be like a picture 0011?
Yeah, because you see what happens when you take the limit here of I don't think we looked at that, did we? No, I don't think we looked at it.
But do you ever populate any other state except 0, 1?
If we...
You start populating balancing pictures?
Alice doesn't, the inertial observer doesn't, but Bob of course does, because his state becomes a thermal state, so all of the states are populated.
It's not zero point shift, so it's zero point
shift. It's some complicated. I think we could probably look at that. Yeah. So okay. So if Rob is an accelerator, so again you could do it by taking an accelerated detector, he would see a different density matrix which has less entanglement, but still the cavities are just standing there, right? And then I could even think about having Alice being accelerated, and the density matrix is even a more mixed one, and one could calculate. The negativity there, I haven't done that, but it's clear that that's different as well. So the lesson from this is that entanglement is observer dependent. And this, in a sense, was not that surprising, because it was already known that entropy is observer dependent. Marlowe did some work on this, very nice work, and I think Danny has some work done in this respect as well. And in the pure case, entanglement is related to entropy, and well, in the mixed state, it's not the case, but it's nice to see how why entanglement is it's observer dependent. And well, in physics, it's always a problem when you have such things. One wants to find a well-defined notion of our physical quantities, our physical concepts. So we here propose an idea of giving a well notion of entanglement in non-inertial frames with this concept of proper entanglement. So it's similar to what you would have in relativity with a proper time, that if you are trying to describe something between observers moving in different ways and they see different times, how would you, I don't know, talk about the simultaneous event and things like that. So we have the notion of proper time. So we are proposing here the idea of having something similar from entanglement, and it would be defined like, if you're talking about two systems, put the observer attached to the system, to the same reference frame of the system. So let me go back to our example and say what I mean by this. If you have two inertial cavities, and you maximally entangle, two inertial observers would see this maximal entangled state, and an accelerated observer would see something else. But it makes much more sense from the point of view of physics to have the two observers inertial as well, because usually if one takes the cavity and the other one as well and they do measurements, they would be doing measurements in the same frame of reference as their object. For example, in the case that you have one accelerated cavity, then it makes much more sense to leave one Alice attached to her cavity making measurements in that frame, and then Rob attached to his cavity making measurements in that frame, because I could also see the whole analysis from the point of view of the accelerated cavity, but the two detectors being inertial, and that would give me a maximal entangled state. So, well, this is just an idea that we're thinking about. And now let me explain why I claim that our results apply to the case in which Alice falls into a black hole. So we have here the Schwarzschild space-time. So it describes the geometry of a spherical non-rotating mass, of mass m. So here we have the line element. And let's see what happens to the light cones. So if you go very far from the origin, this term here is zero, and this one as well. So the line element just looks like Minkowski space. So we have the normal light cones like this. And then when we look at the horizon, which corresponds to r equals to 2m, here we have zero, and here we have infinity. But we want to look at the light cone, so we would have ds squared equal to zero. So the coefficient of, I mean, dt could be anything, and this condition, ds squared equal to zero, forces us to have dr equals to zero as well. So this basically just means that the light cone looks like this. So if you have something coming in this direction, well, it will always fall into the black hole. And well, you can't really have something moving here, but if you could, it would also kind of move in this direction and go back. So that's our black hole. So we have the Schwarzschild metric. And we do a very simple change of coordinates. We take r minus 2m equal to some x squared over 8m. And then we see that 1 minus 2m over r is equal to this kx squared over 1 plus k to the x squared. And near x equals to 0, we can expand this and approximate it by kx squared. So this means that close to the horizon, where r equals 2m, you can see that that corresponds to x being 0, the Schweitzer spacetime can be approximated by Ringler spacetime. So we have this equation, and if you make this transformation, you see we recover the Ringler line element. So basically, this is not, you can't really see the colors, right? So I had a very light stripe here in blue. So basically, I was saying that the Schwarzschild metric close to the horizon of the black hole, some stripe here, can be described by the Ringler space close to the Ringler horizon. So this stripe like that. So this means that our results can be interpreted as Alice falling into a black hole and Rob escaping. And in the limit of infinite acceleration, we would have kind of Rob barely escaping the black hole. And we're interested in this limit because it's in this limit that we can say exactly what happens physically. So now the crazy bit. If the rest wasn't crazy. So we're interested now in understanding if we can prepare this sort of state. Let's see, Alice has this state 0, it's in the Minkowski coordinate, and then Rob, you see, like, sorry, I start again. So in the problem I described before, we had Alice having some state in the ground state and the first excited state, and what Rob was entangling to, what he saw in his cavity was this whole thermal state. So what Frederick and Rob and I are trying to see is that can they prepare a state that's entangled, but that Rob sees his vacuum or his first excited state, not this thermal state. So it's a question of how do you prepare the state. You see that it's in this moment where the cavities coincide and you pass an atom. What would you have to do there to create a state like that? So that's what we're trying to understand. But why is because the uses of this state would be very nice. This state doesn't feel the acceleration. It's a maximum entangled state all the time. So in that sense, we say that it's robust to acceleration. And this state would be a resource for quantum information theory. And we could do perfect teleportation and these sorts of things. And the only restriction would be the amount of classical information that can be exchanged by the two parties. For example, if we go to the extreme case of Alice falling into a black hole, then Alice can never send any classical information to Rob. But otherwise, the state is completely entangled. So we're trying to figure out the preparation of the state. And if you cannot prepare it, why can't you prepare it? What are the physical restrictions? And the other problem that we're working on is signaling from a black hole. Can we use entanglement as a resource of I want to see if you can send anything out of the black hole in terms of information, and if not, why? And think of the following protocol. You prepare an entangled state like the one I described before from the Alting and Milburn thing. And then Rob sends a signal to Alice. And this signal means make a measurement. So Alice always gets this signal. And in the moment she gets the signal, she makes the measurement. And then what happens is that she collapses the state. And this produces an entropy change in the state of Rob. So we're thinking about Alice and Rob sharing many, many copies of the state and doing that. So this would look at some sort of heat that we don't exactly understand what that means and how could it be detected. But if it could, you could probably send a bit of information out by saying, okay, there's no heat or there is the heat. Now, the question is also interesting if you cannot do it, if you find the physical reasons why you cannot do it. So that's another question that we're looking at. So basically, Alice would simply say, I'm alive. Okay, so in summary, I showed that the entanglement between the modes of two cavities is degraded by the Unruh effect when one of the cavities is accelerated. We studied in detail the infinite acceleration limit and showed that the entanglement goes to zero. The mutual information goes to one, which means that the state is only classically correlated, and there is maximal entangled with region two. We also pointed out that entanglement is observer dependent, and we proposed this idea of defining proper entanglement as a well-defined notion of entanglement in analogy to the proper time in relativity. And I showed why our results apply to one party falling into the black hole. And well, we're also now interested in seeing what we can study in relation to the information loss problem and black hole entropy and things like that. I mean, this is more like we haven't yet addressed these things, but I'm interested in them. So I put it here in case somebody knows about it and can teach me a bit on these areas. Thank you.
With respect to one observer, it may not be the graph with respect to another. But that seems to be a symmetric situation. So that on the one hand, if you've shown that acceleration can degrade entanglement, I would expect that acceleration can also upgrade.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, but wouldn't that be a problem? Because remember, when you started out with your talk, you said that you cannot create entanglement by doing just local matter operations that can do communication.
Mm-hmm.
But here you would be saying that you can perhaps create entanglement mm-hmm. by having some
No, so that's why I propose this idea of proper entanglement, because there I would say like the entanglement is really defined when you put the observer with the cavity, and I don't think that there you can create any entanglement in this way. And then if you see it different from a different perspective, it's kind of nice, but it's not the, you see, that's more or less the sort of thing I wanted to go through. That's with this idea, which we haven't finished working out. But the real physical thing is when you describe entanglement by the right observer attached to the frame.
Okay, but then something like restricting the definition of what is entanglement. But would we have to prove then that this fake entanglement produced by acceleration cannot be used for the purposes of ordinary entanglement?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. That the main idea would be that you will end up. I mean, first of all, you have the problem of let's say that you and I prepare this entangled state, and we go in a spaceship. So you can always use this if you stay in the reference frame attached to the cavity, and I stay in mine. We could do a bunch of things all the time. And so, but if I want to kind of measure from a reference frame which is not with the cavity is lost, and then what do I do? No. So. You have some other restrictions, I think. Yes?
So what's the CR change from one type of multiplied entanglement to another type of multiplied entanglement without changing the total amount of entanglement? So you tell me, like, there is different, I'm not understanding all the algebra, but it's quite an abstraction. There's a couple of different particles. So first you have entanglement between two of them, you accelerate it. So you haven't created entanglement, but you have changed the type of entanglement that you have. So say that because you multiply the entanglement, you have no idea which entanglement are the same. So the entanglement, the total entanglement is the same.
Yeah, that's what I said. That is the result that then the entanglement with this disconnect, the entanglement of both Alice and Rob to the disconnected region is maximal. But that you cannot, you see, that you cannot use.
That's how I've thought. The lesson of this is that acceleration degrades usable entanglement, if you like, still entanglement. So you're only going to make life worse than that. My guess, I mean, well, you did it, that's not a problem.
Yeah, but you see, it could also create a factor. That's how you show it.
I don't see how it's going to create a factor.
That's exactly the question. That's
I'm skeptical. Maybe we should talk privately. I don't see how that's going to happen based on what we've done. Like,
no, probably not.
I would guess that you find other restrictions.
Yeah.
So let me show, like, one of the examples of having, I mean, sorry, in the case that you have Rob accelerated and Alice stationary, the state seen by Alice and Rob in the right frame is a state which is not maximally entangled. Although, and this is exactly what you're saying, that you could have creation of Alice and or with the, let's say Bob standing there, Bob making measurements on the as the cavity that's accelerated, he would say that the entanglement is maximal. But that doesn't, you know, he cannot really use it because he has to change. I mean, how are you going to use it if the cavity is running away from you? But that's exactly the situation that you're talking about. You see, Alice and Rob say, okay, the state is sort of degraded. But the inertial observer sees maximal entanglement. So if Rod makes a measurement with an atom which is accelerated respect to him, but it's inertial, then would conclude that the state is maximally entangled. So that's what, it's not that you create entanglement by acceleration, it's just that entanglement is observer dependent. So in the case of two parties, you'd say, okay, it's more or less trivial because I have these four ways of writing the density matrix, and that's it, and they all have different entanglements, and I can understand it. But what happens when you want to talk about multipartite entanglement, and they're all moving around like crazy? You would have so many different possibilities of writing entanglement, so different possibilities of entanglement, and we say, which is the right entanglement? So, as in proper time, that's why we came up with this idea of defining proper entanglement.
What would happen if you study spin, if you study, because there's obviously a way of encoding the information in such a way that it does not degrade, it does not get degraded, right?
Like the thing that I wrote, like if you look at the state, this idea here, no? That's what you mean? Oops, this one. That's a way of encoding the information in such a way that it doesn't feel the acceleration at all.
Right, okay, yeah, so mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the question is how difficult it is to prepare. Can you prepare it? And I would think that you can prepare it, because basically here, I mean that I want Rob to see in his cavity this, but Alice would have to prepare it. But the thing is that, so you can invert, right? The zero in Minkowski is equal to the squeeze state, two mode squeeze operator of this 0,1 and 0,2. So I can invert this. The invert transformation exists. So I would have that 0,1, 0,2 is equal to s to the minus 1 of zero Minkowski. So I don't see why I wouldn't be able to prepare it. I just want to find what does it mean physically to do it. Because in the other way around, I know, right?
Yeah, but also, I mean, there would be other way. I mean, if you have many cavities, you could use your general activity, you just encode the information in a robust way. So, I mean, so there are obvious examples where the entanglement does not get degraded, and examples like this, you know, where the, so do you know, is your problem really just a special case, or does it have some universal, like is it the worst case? Or?
So this is really the first thing done in this direction. The other stuff was this teleportation scheme by, so I would say that there is very little work, and we're now with this whole thing of problems to solve, and one of them is see what happens with spin particles. But I think that some things are really general, like entanglement being observer dependent. That doesn't depend on our model. And
so, for example, if we compare with the scaling that then you got for the spin, right? Is your work, is it there?
I haven't checked that.
Right.
Haven't looked at that. So that's kind of fun because there's really very little done. So there's a lot of stuff to be explored and things. So.